They are seizures, but they aren't epilepsy. They're called by many names: psychogenic non-epileptic seizures, non-epileptic attack disorder, dissociative seizures, stress-induced seizures, pseudo-seizures. They're not an indication of epilepsy, but these seizures do cause upheaval in employment, education, relationships, and independence. Psychogenic non-epileptic seizures are ranked among the top three neuropsychiatric problems worldwide. Nina Pai was a college student in the United Kingdom when her seizures began.
So they started in 2015, the beginning of 2015, so sometime in January. I was at college doing performing arts, and I can remember the first one. I was in a dance class and we were dancing, and then just all of a sudden I kind of felt like my heart just started racing for absolutely no reason. You know how you get when you sort of like you're anticipating something and you're kind of a bit nervous about it, like something
yeah.
you're doing that makes you anxious, or you know, having a conversation that makes you anxious, you get that really horrible like racing heart feeling of like, oh, this doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
I sort of got that, and it was weird because there was nothing making me anxious. I didn't feel anxious. In fact, I love dance, so there was absolutely no reason at all for me to feel like this. And I kind of almost felt like all the energy drained out of my body, and I felt like I was going to faint, except that I didn't really feel faint. So it felt like just everything was just all the energy just drained from my body, and I fell to the floor. And then, like, I stayed there unable to move for literally, it was, you know, very short. It was like a few seconds, and I just got back up again. And it was just such a weird feeling, because it almost felt like, because, you know, I didn't actually faint, or, you know, I'd never fainted, never had anything like that in my life. It sort of felt like, what happened? Did I just lose my balance? Or, you know, it felt almost as if like I should have had some control over it, because it didn't feel like there was anything that wrong with me. It was just a weird thing. So because I literally just got back up again, you know, it was fine, no big deal was made, I just carried on. And then I think it was something like a week or two later, I fell down again, and this time I stayed down, and I can remember just kind of laying there unable to get up. I could hear everything that was going on around, but it just felt very distant, and I just felt like I was just kind of just slightly outside of my body. It was a really weird feeling, and I still had this feeling of what's going on, because I don't actually feel like something is seriously wrong with me. I just feel like I've got this weird thing where it feels like my body just needs to get on the floor for a while. It's almost like spontaneous laying down, except I fall, and it was just a weird feeling. And so this happened a few times, and each time it kind of got longer and longer, and eventually it got long enough for, you know, college to be concerned, and they called an ambulance, because these kept happening at college. And around that time, my dad had died in 2013, so it was all quite fresh and new to me, you know, and it was sort of a bit of a weird experience to me, because you know, I was schooled at home, and, you know, kind of, I had not a very good relationship with my father. He was abusive, and, you know, it was really not a good relationship. But despite that, I was very close to my parents. So when he died, it was very weird. It was very surreal. I didn't really find any way of dealing with it. And my mum was ill as well. She had terminal cancer. So there was a lot of other stress going on in my life at that point. So when these happened, I kind of assumed that as normal, this was some kind of stress reaction, because, you know, because I didn't necessarily deal with things emotionally, it came out in a lot of physical issues like stomach cramps, eating issues, stuff like that, anxiety, depression. So when this started happening, I was just confused, and I automatically kind of almost, you know, just jumped to the conclusion of, oh, it's stress, it's probably nothing. And then when I went to the hospital, obviously they started the process of running tests, and first of all they thought it was my heart, because of what I was describing. You know, they kind of went down that route of doing kind of like the 24-hour heart monitor and stuff like that. They didn't immediately jump to seizures or epilepsy because it was just a faint, it was just a collapse. There wasn't any seizure-like activity. You know, I wasn't absent. It was just, yeah, it was quite weird. And then kind of after the first couple of hospital visits, I found like everything, all my experience with dealing with hospital stuff just completely changed. It was like, because the more often it kept happening, it seemed like almost they just kind of like paramedics would assume that I was faking and that I was just doing this as a cry for attention because, you know, I had a lot going on in my life and, you know, I didn't know what to feel because I kind of wondered, you know, is there something wrong? Am I mentally, is there something wrong? Am I putting this on just without knowing it? You know, because there was nothing physically wrong. All these blood tests and everything else were coming back. You know, there was nothing wrong with my heart. Just my vitamins were a bit up and down. That was pretty much it. Like I was a bit malnourished. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much it. And I just was so confused. And it went on for a couple of months before I actually told anyone else. I didn't even tell my mum what was happening until kind of a couple of months later when this started to get more and more frequent and, you know, kind of more and more people were kind of seeing it happen. And so I was passed around from cardiologist to neurologist. You know, kind of went to see various specialists, went for all these tests. And it was a really strange time, strange feeling, because I hadn't really had anything like this. I mean, I'd had back surgery for scoliosis, but I don't know, this felt all different and weird and concerning. And obviously they were talking about things like, did I have a brain tumor, you know, heart issues, stuff like that. And then finally I started to shake when I went down. I started to shake and have spasms, and so they went down the route of, okay, so maybe this is epilepsy. And so this carried on for a few more months, but then, you know, I was still ending up in A&E, and some medical staff were treating it really seriously and others were going, oh, she's faking, it's just an attention thing. I had paramedic after paramedic just saying, oh, this is what some people do, they find a thrill in you know, having ambulances called out for them. And I'd have paramedics tell me, you know, don't you realize we have actual lives to save? And it's just like, well, yeah, I do know that. I've lost a parent. Of course I know what the ambulance people do. Do you think I want you called out? I know it's nothing, you know, life threatening, but you know, I can't help it. I can't say I don't need an ambulance because I don't know when these are going to happen. I don't even know what they are.
Yeah.
And then I went to stay with my family probably about 3 to 4 months after this started happening, and I had one of these seizures while I was staying there and ended up going to a hospital in London. And I think because my family saw it, they kind of pushed for getting a diagnosis, and they were kind of doing a lot of research for me to try and find out what it was. And we then discovered cataplexy and narcolepsy, and where I was sleeping a lot and very exhausted all the time, the symptoms fit, you know. So mm-hmm. I went to a private neurologist who said, well, there's not much we can do apart from refer you to a sleep center for tests. And so they did that. And everything came back inconclusive. The only thing that they could tell definitely was I had mild sleep apnea. But I did have another sort of seizure there, and they had kind of a visiting neurologist there at the time, and he saw this episode and he said, yeah, you've got dissociative seizures, this is not narcolepsy or cataplexy. He said, you know, you don't even have the reduced muscle tone or anything like that. He said these are dissociative seizures, and he said it happens to a lot of people who've had something, you know, psychological in their life, or, you know, PTSD or stuff like that. And I suffered from PTSD and still do. So I kind of felt, when I finally kind of found this out, I felt like sort of relieved, but also, I don't know, kind of ashamed as well, because I felt like, oh, so this really is all in my head then, because to me, you know, I kind of judged myself. Yeah. And, you know, because this was now a psychological term, you know, it felt like, oh, you know, and it didn't help that they're called psychogenic seizures as well. And, you know, it just all felt very, like, just misunderstood. Through all of this, I ended up homeless for a time, not because of the seizures, but because of the breakdown in the relationship with my mum. And, you know, I ended up getting kicked out of college because of the seizures, because they couldn't deal with them anymore. And so I was actually kicked out, which I didn't even think was possible. I didn't think you could get kicked out for something you had no control over, but apparently you can. So that was, it was, yeah, it was a pretty dark time in my life. And a few other things happened to me at the same time. And it was just kind of one thing after the other. And so sort of, I think, sort of that around mid 2015, it kind of got so bad that I actually made attempts to end my life 3 times in 1 month. And then my family sort of started to take me seriously and realized that, you know, I was really unwell, both mentally and physically. And so they finally decided to take me back to London to live with them. And so I moved in with them. And it was a relief because it meant like that I didn't have to live in a homeless unit, which was horrible. And, you know, I had no money or anything like that. Couldn't work, couldn't go to college, couldn't get an education. I felt like this was it. This was my life sentence, this strange, spurious condition that had just happened. And, you know, there was no cure. I couldn't get on with any antidepressants. You know, they all caused me so many physical symptoms. I just couldn't take them. There was no support, there was no counselling, just nothing. Everything that I was referred to never happened. You know, I got 6 weeks of CBT and that was pretty much the only proactive treatment I had for my seizure. At my worst point, I was having 20 seizures a day.
Wow.
And, you know, I was banging my head on door frames, floors. I was collapsing in the middle of roads. I was grazing my legs, my elbows, everything. How I escaped without broken bones, I don't know. It was just, there was just everywhere I went, there was just such a lack of understanding. And this carried on, you know, until about late 2015. They began to ease up because I'd had my CBT by then. And I think I was beginning to deal with, you know, sort of issues that had arisen from my father dying. And I was beginning to sort of, my PTSD was beginning to get a little better. It wasn't affecting my life as much. You know, it wasn't so invasive. I was able to have, you know, unbroken nights of sleep without awful dreams. And, you know, I'd sort of be able to have a normal day. And I actually managed to go out and get some independence. And it started to feel like, okay, this is really good. This is something that I can, you know, work through and get over. And I qualified as a level one cricket coach because my uncle was involved in cricket coaching and, you know, I was looking for something to do, just anything. And, yeah, you know, I love sports. I love working with kids. So it seemed like the perfect thing. And I did that. And that was really amazing. And I got to sort of teach kids because I was really into dance, heavily into dance. I managed to get to teach kids, you know, to dance. And sort of I had, you know, like roomfuls of these like 8, 9, 10 year old boys who wanted to just play cricket and football dancing. And it was quite amazing really that I managed to do that. And I think I started making progress, and it just kind of, once I started, it sort of really accelerated very fast. And I kind of feel like at the time, now looking back, now that the seizures have sort of come and gone and come back again, I sort of feel like I don't think it was necessarily good that they went so quickly, because I don't think I truly found a way to deal with them. I just found a way to suppress them. So, you know, I mean, while I made a huge amount of progress and I was able to dance again and have some independence, you know, I still felt like there was a lot that I hadn't dealt with. But, you know, I managed to do a lot. And I joined a dance troupe that my cousin was running because she was a singer-songwriter, so she started forming this dance band, and I joined that. And as you can imagine, I'm sure it's not really something that most people would consider even doing, procedures. And I did that for about 4 years. I just recently left the band. So I did that for about 4 years. And I think that it actually helped me to, the dancing helped me to deal with some of the stuff I've been through. It kind of worked as therapy for me, and the traveling that we got to do and all of that, I think that just pushed me out of a comfort zone, and actually it gave me a lot of kind of mental strength. And I made a lot of close friendships with other people in the band, and I became very close with my cousin. And, you know, things were just, they were beginning to go quite well. And then in May 2016, unfortunately, my mother finally passed away from her fight with cancer. 2017, I think, was probably my best year. You know, despite everything that I had going on, you know, I was moving house and traveling and dancing. There was so much going on, but it was really good. But there was a lot of stress that came with it as well. And again, I sort of found like I wasn't really dealing with the fact my mother had died. I was just getting engrossed in the practical matters, and I wasn't really concentrating on the emotional side of things. So kind of by the end of 2017, my seizures slowly started to creep back into my life again. You know, sort of having one like a week or something like that. And then 2018 was kind of a year of what the hell happened, really. There was just nothing specific, but there was just a lot of stress, a lot of things going wrong. There was a lot of breakdowns in relationships with people that, you know, I cared about deeply. But it kind of prompted me to go, okay, this time I really want to do it right. I really want to find the root of what makes me have a seizure and actually deal with it so that they don't come back at all. But yeah, it didn't really happen like that. unfortunately, it just, yeah, the other things got in the way again. And in September 2018, I decided to finally make the brave step of trying to return to education. And as well as dance, my other passion is medicine. I've always been interested in medicine, always wanted to have a career in it. But, you know, it was another thing I thought, I'll never be able to do that now. But I decided that I was going to bite the bullet, and I enrolled on an access to university course, which is quite intense. It kind of fits two A-level years into 1 year. So it's pretty hard work. And I kind of, I went to the enrollment day and I said to them, look, you know, I've got seizures. They're reasonably under control, but, you know, they will happen from time to time. And they said, okay, that's fine. You know, and they kind of did a treatment plan with me and sort of, you know, what would happen if I had a seizure. But because it's not just seizures, it's kind of the symptoms associated with it, the anxiety and the brain fog and just kind of general sort of feeling of exhaustion when you're constantly fighting against your own body. And unfortunately, my grandfather passed away at the beginning of this year, and we were quite close. He was kind of like a second dad to me. Mm-hmm. In the last couple of years, we weren't as close. I kind of sort of, I don't know, pushed him away a little bit. I think I couldn't really deal with any more family issues. So, you know, I kind of, we weren't as close in the last couple of years, but, you know, it was still been a great loss for me. And again, you know, the repeated pattern of not really dealing with it, just pretending everything's fine, has not really worked for me. So the seizures kind of, they happen about once a week, but sometimes I can go a few weeks without having one. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to build up to the point where I can go, you know, many months without one. But I think that's going to take some time to get back to that, especially as I want to kind of not repress anything and actually deal with everything properly. But in this sort of last few months, I've kind of reached out to other people online who are going through similar things. And I found where I thought I was alone and this was such a rare condition and little understood, I actually found, you know, groups of people who were going through the exact same thing, had the same experience as me with kind of the medical profession and the lack of understanding, and people who were trying to have jobs and, you know, support themselves, and people who are trying to get through uni and support themselves, and, you know, the issues that it causes in relationships and just how hard it is generally to cope with. You know, I mean, it's however hard it is for everyone else to cope with, it's twice as hard, if not three times as hard, for us to cope with. You know, we can't get away from it. I wish that there was more understanding and knowledge about the difference between epilepsy and non-epileptic seizures. I wish that medical professionals particularly know the difference and know the right ways to treat people, because they kind of have two extremes. It's either treat it like epilepsy, which can be dangerous because it depends, you know, if they give people certain medication which isn't, you know, which is meant for epileptic seizures and not meant for non-epileptic seizures, it can be dangerous. And, you know, or there's the other extreme of there's actually nothing wrong with you, which is also unfair. It's quite an interesting journey I've been on, and there's been a lot to it, and the seizures are really only a very small part of quite a journey I've been on. But I do feel very strongly about raising awareness for them and kind of finding more ways to get, you know, people to be more supportive of it and for more help to be available and more understanding, more knowledge that's readily available for both people who suffer with these seizures and, you know, their families and friends and carers, and ultimately, you know, doctors and paramedics who should know about this, who should have training on how to deal with this. I feel like it's so inadequate considering how many people suffer with these seizures and how many people are actually finding when they're initially diagnosed with epilepsy, now that it's turning out to be non-epileptic seizures. And, you know, I feel like there should be so much more support and understanding and awareness. And you know, it's sad how little there is. It really is. In truth, in real life, it helps to have doctors who are people, you know.
Yeah.
They like people, they get on with people, because you have to face people all the time, and you have to face people at the worst, on their worst day. They're having the worst day of their life when you see them, especially in hospitals and emergency departments. You know, they're not exactly having the best day of their life if they're in there under your care. And it doesn't take too much to just show just a little bit of understanding. You know, it doesn't take that much. And I know that there are people who abuse the system. I know that there are fakers. I know that there are drug abusers. I know all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, they're still ill too, just a different kind of ill. Everyone is ill, you know, but if someone is going to all the trouble of faking something or going to all the trouble of getting drugs, then there's something there that needs to be treated too, you know.